As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
It's the Totally Football Show today. CR7, no relation to Blake 7, but bringing just as much drama to Old Trafford Saturday. We ask Ron and Jay Lings which returning Red did it better. Elsewhere, Liverpool win in Leeds but lose Harvey Elliott. Chelsea and Man City roll on. There's a surprise for Spurs in South London as this Palace unveil an Edward that actually does some work. And much, much more, all of it coming up in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello, listener. 13th of September today, and you're tuned to the Totally Football Show. Many thanks for joining us. With us, the vocal delights of Dominic Fifield. Hi, Dom.
Good morning, James. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How is Daniel Storey?
Very well, thank you, James. Good morning.
Good. And let's check in with Carl Anker, too.
Ahoy, hoy, James.
Good. Traditional. Daniel, you've got back from Warsaw in your first live game in 18 months. How was it?
Yeah, it was great. Very weird. I felt a little bit more comfortable at Leicester on Saturday than swanning around Warsaw, if I'm honest. Yeah, really, really good.
Okay, good. So you went to the Leicester Man City game as well?
Yes, yeah, there on Saturday. I'm back there on Thursday as well.
Right, for the Napoli match. Interesting. All right, well, we'll talk about a lot of that stuff. Many talking points from the weekend. What would be your big kind of takeaway from the last couple of days, Dom?
I suppose it's been a weekend of debuts or second debuts, you could argue. A lot of strikers hitting their strides early on. Ronaldo, Lukaku, Hudson Edouard at my place on Saturday. I've enjoyed that. I don't know how long that form will last, but let's enjoy it while it does.
Well, absolutely. Hey, Carl, is that a similar theme for you?
I think it's talent ceilings. I can't make heads or tails of about three or four clubs in the Premier League just yet. I know, you know, four games, small sample size, but are Aston Villa good or not? I can't figure that one out.
Mm. Maybe we can help you in the course of today's show. The results, anyway, Saturday kicked the round off with a Palace toppling table-topping Tottenham performance at Selhurst Park. 3-0, the scoreline there, with a brace from new signing Hudson Edouard. First goals of the season for Wolves in their 2-0 win over Watford, and Arsenal in their 1-0 victory against Norwich. Elsewhere, it was goalless for Saints and West Ham. 1-0 wins for Brighton over Brentford and Man City at Leicester, while Chelsea beat Villa 3-0 and Liverpool beat Leeds by the same scoreline, but lost Harvey Elliott to a dislocated ankle. In amongst all of that, one very big game at Old Trafford Saturday afternoon. Man United romping to a 4-1 win over Newcastle. And yes, that's where we start.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power and part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Greenwood went for goal. Goalkeeper's missed it! We've been waiting 12 years for this, so drink it in. Ronnie's back.
Yep, CR7 dwarves everything. Ronaldo making his return with a brace. Bruno Fernandes also contributing a banger. Jesse Lingard running perhaps Ronaldo close in the returning legend getting on the score sheet stakes. And also, I mentioned for Paul Pogba, who got two more assists as United go on top of the table. In as much, Carl, as we can draw any conclusions from a game against Newcastle, we can at least say, hey, Ronaldo's not the new Alexis Sanchez.
Yes, I think that's fair to say. I caught a flight to Spain, watched the game legally at 3 o'clock, and then flew back to the United Kingdom. I thought that was fine. Yeah, it was a very much a Cristiano Ronaldo performance, a post, you know, latter stage Real Madrid, Juventus stage performance from him. He showed great second movement to get that first goal. So if you watch the replays before Mason Greenwood even begins his shot, Ronaldo's beginning movement towards the goal. The second goal he gets, really good movement of feet to get it out from right to left to get that, you know, nutmeg the goalkeeper. So that's good. But to be mildly disrespectful to Steve Bruce's Newcastle, Manchester United don't need Cristiano Ronaldo to beat a team of that quality. Newcastle were okay. You know, they defend deep and they sprung some very good counterattacks. And there were still the same old weaknesses we saw in this Manchester United side in defensive midfield. But I can understand why a lot of Manchester United fans were very, very, very happy about how Saturday went. I can also understand why a number of Manchester United fans felt conflicted and not so happy. So, you know, it'd be remiss of me to not mention the plane that flew over Old Trafford and certain individuals that were present for that game. So it's an interesting time to be a Manchester United fan.
Yeah, the off-field questions then present. But in terms of the way that the team functioned, and as Carl says, it was Newcastle, did witnessing this now armed and fully operational United, Daniel, did it change your view at all about their prospects this season?
Not really. I think what it does do is it kind of adds an extra layer of paper over cracks. And you could argue that Cristiano Ronaldo is more cardboard than paper in that regard. And I think he probably will score 20 league goals this season. And, you know, that didn't happen last season, for example. But there are still those same issues. You know, Carl mentioned the midfield was still very open. They effectively played with a front five, if you think that Paul Pogba is doing a lot more attacking than defending, and kind of one man, Nemanja Matic, waving the white flag as Newcastle try and counter-attack. Better teams than Newcastle, and teams that have got their first choice striker available, which Newcastle didn't in Callum Wilson, will punish that. And I think there's also a bit of a question sort of slightly being generated here about Jadon Sancho. It's very early in his United career, but you see so many times he kind of plays the ball back and then darts forward, which he'd do at Dortmund, and he'd get the pass and he'd be in behind and then he'd play the ball across. In the first half particularly, they just seem to be looking to cross for Ronaldo's head, which is not an illogical option because he scores an awful lot of headers. But I kind of thought they'd signed Jadon Sancho to do something a little bit different than that. And I know they signed Sancho before Ronaldo, so, you know, maybe they just both have to learn to deal with each other, and maybe they won't always be on the pitch at the same time together. But yeah, Sancho just looks a little bit like he doesn't seem to know why he's been signed yet.
You can talk to Van der Beek about that, perhaps. Although his issues potentially won't be that ongoing. I'm not sure if Ronaldo's kind of there for a good time rather than a long time at his kind of advanced age. Pogba, as you say, more in the attacking role than the defensive, but with another couple of assists, that takes him now to 7 for the season. Dom, celebrating the positives of this Man United performance, it was freewheeling, it was fun, it was thrilling.
Yeah, it was a dismissal of a struggling team, and it felt, just watching it, the highlights from it, it felt like a United dismissal of a previous era. To be honest, it felt that, I mean, and the fact that Ronaldo was part of it all and integral to much of it, sort of tapped into that idea as well. I mean, I don't know how far they'll go this season. I don't know whether, you know, I suspect that the better teams, the other contenders, will exploit the weaknesses that still exist in that United setup. But I think that they will. I don't think they'll slip up as much against mediocre teams as they used to, and they've got a real ruthless finisher now in their midst as well. And I mean, in the build-up to this debut, talking to various people who'd worked with Ronaldo over the years, Paul Clement was principal amongst them, and he was saying that the biggest benefit from Ronaldo coming to United will be the influence he has on people like Mason Greenwood, Marcus Rashford, Jadon Sancho as well. And I think we will see that in time. I think off the field, around Carrington, the way that these guys train, the way that they live their lives, I think they will pick up because they are rubbing shoulders with a consummate professional in that regard. So that will be a benefit to United, whether Ronaldo scores 20 or 25, 30 goals a season anyway.
The other goal is pretty special in this game as well. Which did you prefer, Carl? The Bruno Fernandes monster shot or the delicious Jesse Lingard finish?
I'll go for Jesse Lingard on this one. Really nice quick interchanging. And it's quite fun watching Lingard really stake his claim in this Manchester United team. I think what's become very evident since his loan deal at West Ham is that he is a consummate professional. So despite accusations that he's focused on his logos and fragrances and whatnot, he will definitely get a surprising amount of game time for Manchester United this season. I expect to see him perform some sort of role against Young Boys in the Champions League this week as well.
Right. Young Boys. Young Boys. That's early Tuesday, kicking off the Champions League midweek. Sorry, Dom.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask a question of somebody who watches United more regularly than I do. But what impact, Carl, has Rafael Varane had so far? And are there any indications of him striking up a proper partnership and understanding with Harry Maguire? Or is it simply too early to say it?
He's going to be the bath plug in that very leaky transitional defence of Manchester United. I think, you know, I'll probably be on this podcast talking about where's my defensive midfielder in the way I used to talk about where's my director of football. But Varane's recovery pace and his ability to manipulate space and jockey attackers into less dangerous areas will basically do the job of what a rookie or raw defensive midfielder would do. I think he's already struck up a rapport with Paul Pogba. He knows Cristiano Ronaldo from their time at Real Madrid. I think it'll be a similar effect to Edison Cavani in that you bring in a proven winner and a very decorated and well-respected football player, and he also just brings another layer to a lot of football players there. One big thing will be his impact on Aaron Wan-Bissaka, because Wan-Bissaka last season and the season before that was really weak towards crosses directed towards the back post. He used to stand too close to Victor Lindelof. So if Lindelof missed the header, Wan-Bissaka was also just caught napping, whereas Varane is less likely to be caught napping to those crosses directed towards the back stick. So he's going to be asked a lot of questions, and he's answered them pretty well so far.
Brilliant. Well, United then with a new bath plug in the shape of Varane and an extra piece of cardboard in the shape of Cristiano Ronaldo, continuing their excellent start. Spurs, who were top, we'll hear about shortly. Man City, well, they beat Leicester comfortably. Chelsea, anything but comfortable with Aston Villa, yet somehow won 3-0. And Liverpool thumped Leeds, also 3-0 in that game, overshadowed, of course, by Harvey Elliott's injury. We were talking in the build-up to this game about Harvey Elliott, the kind of role, the kind of impact he could have on Liverpool's season. It's going to be a very different kind of couple of months for the young man now. A lot of people making the connection after this game between the injury to the young midfielder and the kind of more laissez-faire approach to refereeing. And indeed, Klopp's own warnings about that earlier on in the season about how, you know, it might take a serious injury to a big player before that was readdressed. Is that a fair link to make?
I think that's kind of making the result fit with the opinion rather than, you know, necessarily one naturally leading to the other. We have seen these before where, you know, we've seen challenges produce serious injuries long before this initiative. We've also seen tackles where the ball is won, the man is taken and a red card's produced, and no one can quite agree, because it's fairly subjective, whether the red card is deserved or not, or given because of a serious injury. I don't necessarily think one equals the other. I think this was just a pretty unfortunate incident. I think Leeds are physical. I think Pascal Stroik is a physical player. I don't think he went in thinking, well, the game's letting the game flow here, so I can dive in and try and win the ball. It was slightly lunging, I think, but it's one of those that if your team commits the foul, you think it's a brilliant tackle. And if your player gets a serious injury, you think it's a disgraceful tackle. I think that's just the very nature of it.
It's interesting that the commentary on Sky and on the BBC, the initial reaction was great tackle from both commentators. Mm-hmm. They both said it. I think it was Martin Tyler and Wilson, I think possibly at Ellen Road. Which, I mean, you look at it at full speed and until you realise that poor Harvey Elliott is sitting there and his foot's dangling at completely the wrong angle. My instinct was the same. I thought he'd got in and got the ball and done well, but it's a trailing leg and it comes through and it lands on the ankle and it ends up being fairly horrific. And then when you do slow it down, he is off the ground slightly as he comes into the tackle. So therefore not technically in control and therefore clearly endangering an opponent. I mean, it's dreadful, dreadful, dreadful luck for Harvey Elliott, who was playing out of his skin and really, really doing well for Liverpool and showing that he deserved to be in that team. But he's young. He'll come back stronger from it, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Pascal Schreit shown the red card for the challenge. Liverpool were already 2-0 up at this point in the game. Mo Salah had opened the scoring, becoming the 30th player to join the Premier League 100 club. Only four men have reached their century quicker than him. Shearer, Kane, Aguero, Henry. What does that tell us about Mo Salah?
He's undoubtedly a Premier League great. I think he's a very curious player in that he has achieved incredible accolades for this Liverpool team, but sometimes often doesn't get discussed as one of the better players in the world. Whereas, you know, you raw numbers, look at the record, like, yeah, that's absolutely one of the best players in the world. And perhaps it's because he's playing in this sort of quasi-winger forward role rather than out-and-out number nine. Perhaps it's because he plays for not a traditional footballing great at the World Cup stage, at least. You know, Egypt very good at African Cup of Nations. But that record, you should be talked about constantly as being one of the best wingers in the Premier League or one of the best strikers in the Premier League, which he, do you mean? He certainly plays like one. So I don't know why we don't talk about it more.
Okay. I feel like we talk about Mo Salah quite a lot, but I do take your point, Carl, possibly not in glowing enough terms. Anyway, Fabinho made it 2-0. Rare set-piece goal conceded by Leeds there. And Sadio Mane eventually got the third. Crikey. That's his 99th goal for Liverpool. So,
took,
you know,
10 shots against Leeds that day. It was really... So Sadio Mane is one of the more inventive thinkers in football. You can really see it when he's, you know, the cogs are whirring in his brain. He's going, right, if I do this and do this and do this and do this, maybe something will come off. And it, you know, in his 2018, 2019, when he's in his pomp, it's quite thrilling to watch how he's, you know, it's a bit like a rock climber just sort of working out how to get to the top. But when it's not in good form, it's still thrilling watching the sort of increased desperation as he's snatching at shots. He'll be good for that goal, and he'll probably have a little run after this now, which he probably needs because he was looking not great.
Leeds need a bit of a run. 17th, no wins yet, 4 goals scored, 11 conceded. That Sheffield United stat hovering over them. Still, they do have Newcastle next. Should Leeds be at all concerned, their supporters?
I mean, there are a number of issues within the team that have not been solved, and I think there probably is a flip side to Marcelo Bielsa's dogmatism in that it provides Leeds with very many advantages that other managers couldn't do, and certainly other elite managers wouldn't have been prepared to do by going there when they're in the Championship. But there is a slight flip side to that in that, you know, he is constantly asked about the set piece issue, and he says, well, if you look at the net table, we conceded 15 last season, but we scored 11, so we're only a -4, and you think, that's fine, but you are still man-marking at set pieces with a not particularly tall team and consistently losing your men at those set pieces and therefore giving up big chances. And, you know, the underlying numbers suggest that they concede about the right amount of set piece goals for the amount of chances they give up. And they aren't really improving in that. There is a danger, I think, that it's gone a little bit flat, but I don't think they'll be in any trouble, because I think that the advantages that Bielsa provides gives them a natural boost that Sheffield United maybe couldn't produce last season, should we say.
All right. Liverpool have got Champions League action, of course, coming up this Wednesday. It's Milan at Anfield. We'll be hearing from James Horncastle on that fixture a little bit later on. Daniel, you saw Man City taking on Leicester Saturday afternoon. Can we have a word on that or two? And I imagine there'll be Bernardo and Silva.
Yes. I mean, City look, you know, ignore the slightly unfortunate, slightly tepid 1-0 defeat to Spurs on the opening weekend. But City look back to their kind of 2018-19 ilk, where Bernardo Silva's running the show. Gabriel Jesus is nipping here and there. They look defensively solid. They're creating a huge number of chances. They are still missing a number of those chances. And if they hadn't won on Saturday, I would have been writing that maybe they did need a number nine after all. But they're getting it done. And you know, they had 25 shots against Leicester. They made Leicester look incredibly ordinary, kind of pressing high at the pitch, forcing mistakes and passing out from defence. You know, they creating chances within 2 or 3 seconds of winning back the ball. These are the attributes of 2018-19 City. And a tough Champions League group, I think, is a slight fly in the ointment for early season. But they look like they are up to speed very, very quickly. We should say, I mean, their bench on Saturday was outrageous. It had De Bruyne, it had Foden, it had Sterling, it had John Stones, it had Zinchenko. I mean, there's a lot to come still. I think they already look ominous again.
Okay, and Bernardo Silva looks back to, well, his best.
Yeah. I mean, Guardiola was very open and said, I'm happy for Bernardo to leave, but not because I want him to, but because I don't want any player here who wants to leave. But the bid never came. I think he was probably a victim of a slightly shrinking transfer market. And his professionalism has never been in doubt. And you know, I remember after, I think it was after Liverpool won the league. Oh, no, it was 2018-19 when City won the league. And I think Van Dijk was named Player of the Year. I think it was that season. And Pep was sure that Bernardo Silva was the best player in the country. He said the way he works to win back the ball and then immediately like flicks into creative mode, there's not really any other players in the league that can do that. They all take a couple of seconds to kind of work out what they're going to do next, and Bernardo doesn't. And they call him, I wrote on Saturday, they call him Bubblegum at City because of the way the ball kind of sticks to him constantly, even when he's under pressure from 2 or 3 players. And I think we just said it about Salah, but I think he's a hugely underrated player because he's not particularly quick and he's not particularly physically imposing and he doesn't score many spectacular goals, but he's the glue in that City side at the moment.
Brilliant stuff from City. Disappointment for Leicester, who have the chance to go again Thursday against the very informed Napoli. That's going to be a fascinating match, although there is kind of one big question mark over it from the Neapolitans' point of view. They're not able to bring quite a few of their players because of the quarantine rules. Their players did actually bother to go to South American and African World Cup qualifiers, and as such, as it stands, won't be allowed to enter the UK because of having been in red zone countries. It seems a bit unfair after, you know, Premier League players didn't go, then kind of got away with it because FIFA backed down.
Yeah, it does. I mean, clumsily pivoting to something else on Leicester. I think Brendan Rodgers is going to have to change his attacking plan. Towards the end of last season, or for the second half of last season, he famously played Iheanacho and Vardy as a front two, and Iheanacho had the time of his life. And he's gone back to the original plan at the start of the season, just playing Vardy on his own. And I don't know if Iheanacho is not quite fully fit and Daka's settling in, but yeah, Vardy looks pretty isolated. And James Maddison did not play very well, hasn't been playing that well so far this season. And I think he's going to have to go back to that front too, whether it's Daka or Iheanacho with Vardy, because they look too easy to control at the moment, Leicester, which is kind of the antithesis of what Rodgers wanted them to be.
Mm. We'll hear more about Napoli's fantastic start to the season. Meanwhile, in Tuesday's European edition of The Totally Show, Man City will be up against RB Leipzig in the Champions League on Wednesday. Chelsea in Champions League action on Tuesday. They'll be hosting Zenit St. Petersburg, fresh from that 3-0 win over Aston Villa. Dom, did you see this game?
Yeah.
Right. Villa kind of comfortably beating Chelsea for most of the game, apart from the scoring goals bit, and thus losing 3-0.
Yeah. Oh, irritating that for Villa, isn't it? No, they were very good first half. They did control it. Chelsea, I think a few of them, going back to the almost harking back to the City situation as well. It's, I think it's difficult for some of these elite clubs immediately after an international break where they just simply haven't had very many bodies at their training ground in preparation. I think some of the smaller clubs, so to speak, who have more people to work with, it probably benefits them slightly more. And Chelsea just looked... Chelsea looked a mishmash of a team in as much as Tuchel's obviously... he wanted to give the fresher players game time ahead of a hectic schedule where the group stage kicks in the Champions League. And it just looked a bit awkward. The combinations all looked a bit awkward. Where Villa looked more settled. They looked yeah, in control, but they didn't take their chances. And the difference in the match, ultimately, was the fact that Chelsea had the clinical striker on the pitch, the ruthless player. And Romelu Lukaku at the moment, I think he had 25 touches in the game. He scored 2 goals. I mean, his as a second coming, a second home debut for him, I mean, that was almost a dream scenario for him. I mean, he doesn't surprise us anymore. He's doing exactly what they thought he would do. He rolls defenders. He runs in behind. He's got the game intelligence, the movement, the touch is there. It's not like it was in his previous stint at Chelsea, and he's just added this another dimension to Chelsea's forward line. I mean, a team that was profligate last season just looks ruthless now because of him. And they capitalise on Tyrone Mings' error as well, and Kovacic is playing out of his skin in midfield as well. So they've got a lot going for them. They've got a lot of options, and I suspect they'll be by the end of this little flurry of games ahead of the next international window. I think Chelsea will be playing far more cohesively as a team, and they'll still be winning games, probably as convincingly as the 3-0 scoreline suggested on Saturday.
Here's a stat I wasn't expecting. Those were Romelu Lukaku's first ever goals at Stamford Bridge for any club, which I find remarkable. They had a clinical, ruthless striker, as you say. They also had their first choice keeper in Mendy, who had a brilliant game, while Villa, because of that whole quarantining thing, were missing Emi Martinez and also Emi Buendia. Carl, you were scratching your head over Aston Villa. This game, I imagine, is part of the whole kind of conundrum for you.
Yes, I think they are Europa quality in the squad. I can't quite make out if it's Europa League or Europa Conference they're going to end up in. But there's something in Aston Villa that is quite promising. Leon Bailey was okay against Chelsea, I think. I think what was remarkable about Chelsea right now and their strength and depth is that Sal had one of the poorer debuts I've seen in the Premier League in a little bit. 45 minutes to forget. And Chelsea just went, okay, fine, off you come. In goes Jorginho. Whereas... Aston Villa seem to be having a couple of teething problems with their new signings as well. So I think both teams will be there or thereabouts. I still think Chelsea probably have the edge in the title race. I just can't quite figure out what exactly the final form of this Aston Villa squad will be yet.
I wonder if part of it is individual mistakes, in that Dom mentioned they looked in control and they created chances, and Carl mentioned we can't quite work them out. But I think the season they came up, I think only two teams in the league made more individual mistakes. Last season, only two teams in the league made more individual mistakes. Tyrone Mings makes an individual mistake for the goal. It's almost as if there's kind of two forces battling each other. And for half of a game, one of them wins and they look really good. And then occasionally the other one, kind of the bad conscience sat on the shoulder, interrupts and something silly happens and it kind of undermines the good work, which kind of creates that scenario where, yeah, are they a good team because they're playing well, or are they a bad team because they're making mistakes? It's kind of hard to work out.
All right, well, more evidence to come next week. Next up for us on The Totally Show, it's Palace.
Ah, the summer was fun, wasn't it? No allegiances, everyone getting behind England, Three Lions being sung everywhere. But now the Premier League is back, get Grealish off the bench, he can stay on it at City. Pickford might have been a safe pair of hands, now he's just a pair. And enough of Jules Rimet dreaming, now it's our turn to dream. So kiss goodbye to that vomit-inducing unity and welcome back proper football. Let's celebrate flair on the grass, not a flare up the... Paddy Power!
18+, begambleaware.org.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham.
Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Zaha moving through the Tottenham defence, Edouard in the middle with an early opportunity maybe, gets his shot, oh! That's how you announce your arrival! Conor Gallagher, Edouard's in again, Edouard for another, oh he's got another!
League-leading Spurs humbled 3-0 by Crystal Palace on Saturday. Here's Dom Fifield on Twitter. Wow, that doesn't happen at CPFC.
I was talking about the striker. I was talking about a Palace signing a striker who then scores after 25 seconds of his debut. I actually did some research for this show and listed all the strikers that Palace has signed since they got promoted in 2013. And it's a motley crew. And I'm going to read it to you now, so give me 10 minutes. Dobby, Amiobi, Jerome, Chamak, Gale, Andy Johnson, Sonogo, Keshi Anderson, Fraser Campbell, Adebayor, Ladapo, Bamford, Wickham, Remy, Benteke, Sirloth, Ayu, Tosin, Batshuayi twice, Mateta, and now Edouard. And of all of those guys, I'm pretty sure Edouard's the only one who scored in his debut.
And wow, he probably would have done better with the actual Motley Crue, you know.
There were some great names in there.
Yeah, no, that's an incredible roll call. Yeah, Edouard, the first player to score a brace on his Premier League debut as a substitute, getting a little bit fiddly, this stat. Since Sergio Aguero, though, that's the nice bit. Since Sergio Aguero for Man City a decade ago. Wolf Zaha from the penalty spot with 14 minutes to go. Of course, before all of this, Spurs had gone down to 10 men after Zaha's clash with Tanganga. And then the penalty was for the handball. When Ben Davis, if you wanted to demonstrate what would be a handball offence, you'd stick your arm out like this. And I thought it was surprising from Ben Davis. But anyway, Palace, I mean, beyond the fact that they were playing 10 men, very good for this, yes?
Yeah, they merited it. It wasn't a great first half, but they were starting to wear Spurs down by the break, and then they capitalised late on. I mean, don't get ahead of ourselves. It was a brilliant time to be playing Tottenham Hotspur. Absolutely brilliant time. I mean, for them to start that game with Eric Dier and Tanganga in central defence, and then to lose Dier very, very early on, and to end up with Davies playing at centre-back, I mean, it's stuff of dreams for Patrick Vieira. But Palace are trying to be something different this year. They're trying to be more proactive and more aggressive going forward. And that's exactly what they were. It's given Zaha a new lease of life. They've got options to throw on from the bench. I mean, the fact that they could bring Edouard on and Michael Olise, who I'll repeat, I'm pretty sure I said it last time on this show, Olise is going to be a star and he will be drawing the attention by the end of this season. He is very, very good and a creative force, and it's still a teenager. So there's a lot going for them. Conor Gallagher is a force of nature in midfield as well. I mean, he never stops running, the kid. He's astonishing. And when you've got him and James McArthur, who's at the other end of his career, but equally aggressive with his running and energetic, there's a good balance to it all. And long may it continue.
As for Spurs, Daniel, this was as bad as anything under Jose Mourinho, you wrote.
Yeah, I mean, Dom has referred to a couple of the excuses, and there are a few. You know, the trio of players who were fined by the club for nipping off to South America without permission set the tone, and that midfield looked, well, it was nothing. It didn't look to have an obvious plan. It just looked to be, here are four players who are fit and have settled in at the club. You know, so there's no Brian Hill because they'd not settled in. There's no Ndombele because they're not quite sure what's happening with him. So they just picked the other four, and it looked
no
like
Son
that.
As well.
Yeah, no, Son, and more worrying still than the defeat was the fact that Nuno refused to put a timeline on Son's recovery other than saying it doesn't look particularly good, which is the worst of all news for Spurs, because Kane is the superstar, but without Son, Kane is far less. I think I'm right in saying this was the first time in his career that he's played a whole Premier League game without having a shot.
Or even a touch in the opposition's box. Yeah, any Spurs fans are wondering how they'd have got on without Harry Kane. Got a little bit of a sneak preview there. And they have Chelsea next, Spurs. Chelsea. And you talk about it being ideal, facing them with Eric Dier and Tanganga there. They might not have either. Tanganga's going to be suspended for the Chelsea game. Eric Dier, I don't know how long he's out for. Davinson Sanchez, Christian Romero in quarantine. Yikes.
To go back to Dom's point about the first half wasn't great, I watched a match today on Saturday night, and I think it was an early Wolf Zaha chance, and it immediately skipped to the 42nd minute. So I understand theoretically what Tottenham were trying to do with that midfield diamond. So, you know, try and clog up the middle and then attack through the break through the wings with Lucas. But a midfield diamond of Harry Winks, Højbjerg, Oliver Skipp and Dele is not... That is turgid. That is...
All right. Anyway, Crystal Palace, first win of the season. Arsenal also getting their first victory. They 1-0 to Norwich. Goal scored by Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who likes scoring goals against the Canaries. A new Arsenal, some are saying. Others are saying, let's wait until they play someone who's not Norwich. What do you think, Daniel?
Yeah, I think that's about right. I mean, they created 30 shots, which is their most for almost 4 years in the Premier League. But I was saying to Charlie before the show, I kind of wrote that was great that they created 30 chances. And then I thought, well, yeah, but you only scored one of them. So there are two ways of looking at that. And they won't get 30 chances every week. It is a new side, though. Arteta said after the game these were his best 10 days in management, which sounded quite self-damning, but I think what he was referring to was the fact that he's got these new players in. He got to spend the international break creating this new team, and in his defence he picked a completely new team. He picked a brave team that if they hadn't won the game he would have come in for huge criticism anyway, but people would have wondered, well, if these are the new players and you told us this was the future and they can't win in the present. So it was a huge win. It was a must-win game. But yes, as you say, let's see them not crumble at Turf Moor next weekend first before we start saying they're back.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. With Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. Which is handy for when Spurs stop pretending to be this ruthless winning machine and revert back to type. Ready for the fast bit? Pre-match bet builders only. Get your stake back as a free bet. Minimum 4 plus legs. Max free bet £10. Excludes enhanced match odds. T's and C's apply. It's over 18s only. And please gamble responsibly.
Other stuff. Southampton West Ham finished goalless. Mikel Antonio, who was crowned Premier League Player of the Month on Friday, sent off for two bookable offences on Saturday. So that's unfortunate. Also because who's going to play in his position next week for them with him suspended?
Maybe Nikola Vlasic, but...
Yeah, Jared Bowden as a false nine was an option that Rishane Thomas, who covers West Ham for The Athletic, once mentioned to me. And I think they've got two promising strikers in the academy. Their names currently escape me. But yeah, this is the not great scenario. And they've got Manchester United next, which will be fun, I think.
Speaking of fun, what about Ralf Hasenhüttl and his sartorial selections this season? Carl, you've spent obviously a lot of time in deep with Saints. What's behind his new direction?
So Ralf Hasenhüttl is quite a superstitious gentleman. I know he wore a suit on his first ever Champions League game when he was in charge of RB Leipzig, and then he lost, and then he decided to never wear a full suit again in a game. And then he had another spell, I think, in Bundesliga Zwei, where he wore some yellow trousers and they won a game, and he just kept wearing that as well. So he's currently wearing this sort of chino waistcoat, biker chain thing. And he was asked about this after the draw against Manchester United, where sort of, what's the new look about? And he said, well, you know, I fancy the change, the weather's good. And he said, yeah, if you keep winning and keep getting results, I'll just keep going with this outfit. So right. I think this sort of jobbing magician look will continue until Southampton lose a game.
But if you're Southampton manager and you never wear your clothing choices again, if they coincide with you losing a match, presumably by the end of pretty much a season, you're going to be down to what, a mankini, a pair of like nipple clamps, or what?
He didn't change it up too much after a certain high scoring defeat, and then he stopped wearing the cap after another certain high scoring defeat as well. Curious soul. And
does rather suggest that when he gets it right, the rest of the league is in all sorts of trouble, doesn't it?
Yeah. Okay, anyway, that was that game. Also this weekend, Brighton made it 3 wins out of 4. Crikey, it took them 19 matches to achieve 3 league wins last season. They've already done it in the first 4 games this time after going to the Brentford Community Stadium and winning 1-0 with that 90th-minute beauty from Leandro Trossard. Excellent.
Brighton outperforming XG. Oh, God, I waited for this so long. Sweet, amazing. Sweet variance.
There's a suggestion that Tony Bloom was in the away end in this game because of his relationship with, his non-relationship with Matthew Benham. bit of a grudge match on the old ownership model. But a great result, a fantastic result, because I think Brentford will... ruffle a few feathers at that stadium this season. They'll make it life very awkward, and Brighton weathered it. But they've got a very solid base, Brighton, and they have got talented players. And McAllister and Trossard are two of them who I think look as if they've really clicked into gear early this season, which is great good news for them.
Indeed. The other game played so far this weekend was Wolves winning 2-0 at Watford, finally getting their first goals of the season, the first of them contributed by a Watford themselves. Daniel, this was something that struck a chord with you, Chilean Francisco Cerialta.
Yeah, it's just a horrible piece of fate in that Watford campaigned to have players made available. And I think it was around 11 o'clock on Friday night that they discovered that FIFA had ruled in their favour after the Chilean FA had requested that players, including Cerialta, would be banned. And yes, he then scores a bizarre own goal, because normally, at least with an own goal, you can tell what the players are kind of trying to do. It reminded me a little bit, although not as spectacular, of that famous Ian Dowie own goal where he kind of just rushes into the back post and rises to score a header, and it looks like he's forgotten which penalty area he's in. It's kind of similar in that he just aimed a header past his own goalkeeper and absolutely nailed it.
Well, that's nice. Moise Kean did a similar one, actually, for Juve in their defeat away to Napoli on Saturday, which has left them, by the way, fact fans, a whopping 8 points off the top of the table and only goal difference outside the relegation zone, this after just 3 rounds of the Serie A season, admittedly. But anyway, Wolves, and they came up with a second goal. Remember, they'd had 69 unsuccessful shots without scoring before this match, but 2-0 here, the second coming from Hwang Hee-chan, which wrapped up the point. So Watford, to update that stat from Thursday's pod, opening game of the season, they were looking brilliant, 3-0 up with 20 minutes to go against Carl's Aston Villa. Since then, it's been a constant downward spiral, conceding 7 goals without reply. But they do take on Norwich next Saturday, so there's that. Everton against Burnley is your Monday night clash. Toffees can join Man United, Chelsea and Liverpool at the top of the table, or at least be level on 10 points if they win. Very good. After that, loads of Champions League action on the way. We're going to focus on one fixture in particular in a second or two. But first, let's get some odds from Paddy Power with producer Charlie.
Thank you, James. And thank you, listener, for definitely still listening at this point. I'm joined by Carl Monaghan from Paddy Power, and we're going to be talking about the return of the Champions League. Sorry. League. Carl, it's Barcelona v Bayern on Tuesday, and I can't be the only one who's wondering what the odds are of another 8-2.
Well, a repeat of the 8-2 Bayern-Barca massacre at the Camp Nou this Tuesday, Charlie, will give you 200-1 about that. Chances are pretty slim. But the wonderful traders of Paddy Power make the Bavarian heavyweights favourites at even money. Barcelona are 23-10 and the draw is 14-5. Both sides are unbeaten so far this season, but Bayern have played three more games than the Catalans and come into this having won five on the bounce. Hard not to foresee, Charlie, a Bayern win here, as life after Messi may well begin to rear its ugly head. Barcelona are a 22-1 shot to win the Champions League outright, while Bayern are a 7-1 shot to go all the way. In terms of the goal-scoring markets, though, there could be some value here in backing the likes of Memphis Depay, Robert Lewandowski, or even the moody Leroy Sané. All three players sparkled for their countries during the international break and should come back to their clubs with that bounce only goals can give you.
Elsewhere, Liverpool are taking on Milan at Anfield on Wednesday. They've met in Istanbul, Athens, but never Merseyside. How do you see this one panning out?
Well, Charlie, the fans are back at Anfield, and that, coupled with the return of Man Mountain Virgil van Dijk, has already made Jurgen Klopp's men a tougher proposition to beat for visiting sides. Liverpool are the odds-on favourites at 1-2 to win the game. The draw is 7-2, and AC Milan are 9-2. Now, AC Milan caught the eye on Sunday evening, to be fair. Zlatan came off the bench to help them to a 2-0 home win over Lazio, and that made it 3-3 in Serie A so far for the Rossoneri. But Liverpool should have too much firepower for the midfield, Charlie, and having a slice of Liverpool minus one at 7-5 could be the way to play it in terms of the value. So Bayern and Liverpool definitely ones for the Accas this week, listeners. And don't forget, Charlie, we here at Paddy Power will go money back as a free bet if one leg of your fourfold or more Acca lets you down.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop, which is good advice, I think, in pretty much any area of activity. Totally Football League show. That's fun. That's out on Monday today. It's going to feature, I imagine, some chat about that 3-3 between Reading and QPR, which, Dom, you went along to. Andy Carroll.
No,
I'm just saying Andy Carroll randomly. Was he actually he get on the score sheet?
He's not signed for them.
Oh, he didn't.
No, not yet. Anyway, I mean, I think Reading probably do need a forward coming in. Although that said, John Swift has scored six goals from midfield for them already this season, and that hat trick he's an ex-Chelsea player, and that hat trick on Saturday was superb. Very well taken goals, but Reading look aside, shorn of confidence. QPR, exact opposite. They're brimming with it at the moment. They look fantastic. Really, really. I mean, if anything, profligate. And they should have won the game comfortably. But there's something quite impressive happening at QPR. They've built quite a good squad on the quiet. They've got a lot of options, attacking options in particular, and to bring on Albert Adoma and Andre Gray off the bench to turn that game from 3-1 down to a 3-3 draw was impressive. I think over 2,000 QPR fans in the ground as well. They were making a hell of a lot of noise. So it was a good occasion. It was a good game.
All right. Anybody else want to talk about stuff that happened in the Football League this weekend? Daniel?
Go on, pal.
Move on.
But anyway, more about all of that on the Totally Football League show. A Totally Football Show European edition, meantime, that will drop on Tuesday. Looking ahead to the first match day of the Champions League and probably a bit Europa League and that kind of thing. I chatted Sunday night with James Horncastle about one Champions League game in particular. When you look at the fixtures this week, there's some huge ones in the Champions League, but the one which I think maybe catches our eye the most is Milan-Liverpool, because they've only ever met before in Champions League finals, and also because it's Milan and Liverpool. How big a game does this feel like to you?
It feels replete with history, tradition. I think it's fantastic to see Milan back in this competition because they are associated with it. In fact, they've defined themselves by winning this competition more than their domestic peers. You know, they've won it, what, 7 times compared with, you know, the 3 of Inter, the 2 of Juventus.
Or the 6 of Liverpool.
Or the 6 of Liverpool. So to have been out of this competition for the last 7 years, I think it has made it less of a competition.
Right.
Because Champions League needs Milan.
So this is a hugely prestigious fixture. Can this Milan, with the departures we've seen over the summer, can they live up to this kind of game?
I think it's still early for them. Yeah, they played in the Europa League last year. I thought they played well against Manchester United, particularly at Old Trafford. Kessié scored a fantastic goal that night. I think they deserved more from that tie. But yeah, I think Liverpool are far and away ahead of them at the moment. And that's not a slight on Milan. It's just a recognition that Liverpool have become, you know, one of the, if not, yeah, the 3 best teams, I would say, in European football. They've still got a long way to go, but I think it's only by measuring themselves against the likes of Liverpool, the likes of Atletico in this group as well, that Milan will get better and compete again, maybe for this trophy at some stage.
Well, we saw on Sunday Milan continuing their perfect start in Serie A by beating the also previously perfect Lazio 2-0 at San Siro with Ibrahimovic back and scoring the second goal. If they were to beat Liverpool midweek, how might they do it?
Well, I think Milan have put together quite an athletic team with Theo's for his acceleration from the back really adds to what they've got in attack. And I think they match up quite well against Premier League teams. I think that's one of the reasons why Kessié, for example, appeals to the likes of Tottenham, the likes of Manchester United, the likes of Chelsea. And I think, you know, they've got 2 players up front who some Milan fans are eager to see play together, Giroud and Zlatan, who know the Premier League, know what it takes to play against a Liverpool team, a Liverpool back line as well, and deliver. And I think it's actually going to be very interesting to see, I think, how, you know, Ibrahimovic again struts on this stage. Because we have seen over the last couple of years at Chelsea how well Giroud performs, be it in their last Europa League win, be it in the Champions League as well. So, you know, I think Milan have lots of ways to beat teams. So yeah, I think it's going to be a great occasion for us to either to follow Anfield or to follow on the goals show, James.
On the goals show, it's true. Oh, brilliant. Well, thank you so much for being with us for now, James Horncastle.
Pleasure.
James Horncastle. Daniel, you'll be going along to Anfield. You're all about going to games now.
Yes, a glut to begin with. Yeah, I'm really excited. This is, I think, probably the best Champions League group on the basis that it has supposedly multiple elite teams in it, but it also is reasonably close. I think Porto and Atletico Madrid probably both think that they can qualify, and Liverpool and Milan certainly both think they can qualify. So it makes every game in this group vital. So I think sometimes in the Champions League group stage, when you have one weaker team, you get a slightly sluggish start, whereas neither team can afford that here. Liverpool need to get over the Harvey Elliott kind of headache, sad as it is, and push on and win this game, because if they don't, then you immediately feel like you're playing a little bit of catch-up.
Other exciting games this week include Barcelona-Bayern on Tuesday. That's from a group featuring also Benfica and Dinamo Kiev. And also Inter against Real Madrid, a repeat of last season's group stage matchup. They're in a group with Shakhtar Donetsk and Sheriff out of Transnistria. But anyway, that's going to be interesting. That's on Wednesday. Carl, Dom, what are you looking forward to from the midweek action?
Well, I'm going to Chelsea Zenit St. Petersburg, strangely. Wow. At Stamford Bridge, which I think will be the start of Chelsea taking control of that group.
Seems fair. Carl?
I'll be covering Young Boys versus Manchester United, which should be a fairly straightforward victory for Solskjaer's team. The last time the two teams faced or opened the Champions League together, United won 3-0 and Paul Pogba got himself a goal under Jose Mourinho. So should be okay. Always watch Atalanta, as James Horncastle likes to tell us with some other very, very intelligent football pundits. So yeah, I'll be enjoying that when I can later on.
Although if you were watching Atalanta this weekend, you'll have seen them losing at home to Fiorentina, which is a bit of a surprise, though. Nice to see Fiorentina doing better. Atalanta in Champions League action will be away at Villarreal.
Two teams that have very differing interpretations as to how to play football.
Yeah, that's fair. Anyway, if you're not sure which game to follow, the good news is that the Goal Show will be returning this season on BT Sport. And we'll be on air from, I think, 5 to 8, something interesting like that. Just in time for the evening kickoffs, we'll bring you all the goals from the early games and then romp through all the 8 o'clock matches and that in the company of James and Rafa and Julien and a bit of Don Hutchison thrown in from time to time. Great. Excellent. For now, though, that wraps it up for this edition of the Totally Football Show. Many, many thanks, listener, if I may, on your behalf to Carl Anker and to Dom Fifield and to Daniel Story and to producer Charlie. And go on, have a thanks yourself for sticking with us. We'll be back, well, Tuesday with the Euro stuff and then Thursday to review the Champions League games. For now, though, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.